5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that all three...
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Duh!
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Hello, 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 and it is good evening, one and all. It is the 26th of March. Wow, can't believe it. And it is episode 181 of the new Panic Room. We almost didn't make it. We're a little bit late on because of technical difficulties. And personally, I think it's because the establishment don't want us to be on the air, you know, because we're so, you know, challenging. Probably a good word, actually, challenging. And speaking of challenged, can't really put it off any longer. I think it's, you know, a sign of the times. I think, you know, the government are trying to silence us because, you know, we're so against the man and all that nonsense.
They can't keep us down. They can't.
No, oh, by Jiminy. No.
It has been a day. It has. And I'm thinking, you know, this is like, you know, as sad as the sound. So this is like one of the things that, you know, keeps me going all week. And you know, so.
Yes, that sounds very sad. If this is the highlight of your week, you must have a terrible, terrible life. I have
well,
to say.
Well, now it's even more. So this is our
you know, social life now. This is it. This is the most interaction we get, you know, in a week, really. So
we should have a show now, you know.
That's like 24/7, 7 days a week, you know, just to be on, just to chat,
to do something. Yeah, I'm with you.
I know. It's funny. As I was speaking to somebody today, I said, well, you know, I mean, my life, you know, hasn't changed an awful lot. You know, I'm still work from home, I'm home all day, what have you. But it's just knowing that we can't do something.
Yes, exactly.
You know, normally, middle of the day, I wouldn't normally just think, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the movies. But because I can't, I want to, you know what I mean? Or I think, well, oh, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, I want to pop down to the brothel, you know. But I can't do that because obviously social distancing. Part of it is like, obviously a lot of it is cyclists, but you obviously see all these the people who, you know, go to work and that, you know, you see them. I've just seen, you know, a bunch of people I know just deteriorate over the past week and a half because they've been home. Not only are they home from work, they're stuck home with the kids. The kids are home as well. Yeah. It's like torture for these people. So I guess, you know, we've sort of been rehearsing for this all these years. So something to be said for that. Social distancing is sort of, you know, my lifestyle choice anyway. And I'm not sure whether that's because I don't like people or it's best that I'm kept away from people. It's what, maybe both. Maybe both. Maybe the two are not mutually exclusive.
No, not much has changed for us either, but at the same time, you know, I feel like I'm going stir crazy, and I'm thinking, really, you know, we don't do a whole lot. You know, occasionally we'll run out for lunch or, you know, we get groceries.
You're always out for lunch. You always go for lunch. That's what you do.
Not always.
You do lunch.
A lot. So now that, you know, I'm cooking at home and making lunch at home, you know, but I feel like I'm going crazy and I'm thinking we don't really do a whole lot. But at the same time, you know, it's, I guess, the idea that, you know, we're not supposed to right now. We're supposed to stay at home. And then over the week, no, it wasn't even the weekend. Holy crap, that's how weird it was. I think it was like yesterday. I was up in the office and I could see the people outside and there was like a ton of people walking their dog. I didn't even know we had that many dogs in the neighborhood. There was like, you know, people and dogs and kids riding their bike. And that was kind of cool. That really was. It made me, you know, remember my own childhood of, you know, you never were indoors. But
our PlayStation was the street. And that was it. As long as it wasn't raining, you know, torrential rain, you were out, you know, and we're off. You see, that's the thing these days, you know, so, I mean, and I'm a parent, I'm as guilty, you know, I'm not judging, but nowadays, you know, it's like my daughter, you know, she's got a phone with her all the time, she's got a tracker on her phone, you know, ostensibly for if she loses a phone, but really so I know where she is. When I was a kid, summer break, whatever, you know, we're off out, yeah? I'm off out. We'll go out, we'll have our breakfast, and off we go. And as long as we were home before, you know, by the time the street lights came on, that was it. We would be gone all day. We'd go off down the lanes, you know, climbing trees and getting up to mischief and all that. But that was it. We were gone all day. You know, anything could have happened, you know, but we were home.
Yeah.
The minute that, you know, the streetlights came on, that's our kid. That's when we came. We didn't have phones, we didn't have watches. We just, so it started getting a bit dark. We started heading home and we'd be gone literally all day. And there's no text your mum to let her know that you're safe and that. And, you know, maybe our parents just didn't care, but I think, you know, we grew up as a tougher generation. The generations today, they're soft. They are fucking soft. They really are.
Oh my god! I mean, because all these groups, the mom groups on Facebook, and seriously, I go in there not for entertainment. And these moms, you know, they're talking about they have the phone checks and they want to, you know, see everything that's on their teenager's phone. And you know what? I don't. I am glad that there are some secrets between me and my child. And thinking my mom did everything I was doing. And, you know, we both
God,
survived.
No.
Yeah, right?
There are still things I got up to as a kid. I still wouldn't say. I did. I mean, my daddy's now 94 this year, bless him. I still wouldn't tell him some of the stuff I got up to as a kid. You know, there's all this thing about, I mean, my daughter's big on TikTok, you know, where they film little videos and that. And, you know, I keep an eye on it. And I've said, well, you know, she dances and sings and the friends do that. She's got a small group, you know, she doesn't communicate with anybody other. I mean, these are kids that I know, and I know their parents.
Right.
I know who they are. They come over, and so we know them. And then you say, oh, you know, perverts are watching, you know, these clips of girls dancing and that. And to be maybe have the wrong attitude. It's like, well, so what? It's not harming my daughter. If some, you know, mucky old sod in his mum's basement somewhere in Glasgow, he's getting off to my daughter singing to whatever she sings to, then fine. I it's not harming her. He's not communicating with her. He's not trying to groom her, anything like that. Then fine. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe I've got the wrong attitude. But it, I mean, what do you do? Do you say, you know, don't take your kids to the don't take them to the water park. Because, and you guarantee it, you know, some mucky old man wants to see little girls in swimsuits, he's going to spend the day at the water park, yeah?
It's true. No, it's true.
So what
do
you do? You know, put them in, you know, make them wear, you know, shirt and tie because they're at the water park. If somebody wants to do it, they're going to do it, yeah? You can do is make sure that said people do not, you know, make approaches. They're in no danger to each other. My daughter, seriously, anybody approached my daughter, she would kick the fuck out of them. Seriously.
That's,
I mean, she has been trained. She trained in Taekwondo, so she's pretty handy. So, I do worry. I'm a dad. But I worry less than I think probably a lot of parents do.
No, definitely.
Because she knows. She's sensible. She would not go off with anybody. She knows if anybody approached her, kick, scream, yell, bite, scratch, whatever it takes, just get the fuck away, run like hell, you know. And so I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I always say if anybody kidnapped her, they'd soon bring her back, to be honest.
You know, yeah, I know, right? No, you know, I think the more we coddle our kids, the more we shelter them and coddle them and keep them away from, you know, every single thing. They're the ones who are going to rebel or not, maybe not even. They're going to be the weaker ones, so they're not going to be able to make it when, you know, it is time to leave the nest. They're going to have no idea how to make it on their own, you know?
Well, I remember when I went to university, there was a couple of girls, actually, in my zoology class, who the parents, you know, being sort of, you know, modern parents, they never watched TV up until sort of high school. I remember when I was chatting to one of the girls, Anna, her name was, great girl, saying that her parents thought, you know, we're doing the best, it's for best and all the rest of it. But she said, you know, she'd be at primary school, middle school, and kids would be talking about, you know, chips and Scooby-Doo and all that sort of stuff. And she was just excluded from all that. It's modern culture. You know, the TV, for people berate it is a window to the world. Kids see things that, you know, they would never see, you know, things that we never saw. Some stuff you don't want them to see, but a lot of stuff, you know, it opens up all that, you know. I think it's important. I mean, yeah, don't stick your kid in front of the TV 24/7. But, you know, it is part of everyday life. It's like you say, the internet, all these things that people try to shelter the kids from. And it was fine that the more sheltered kids are, like you say, the ones who you could get to sleep with after, you know, a couple of beers. So, you know, win-win. really. But yeah, they would. I mean, that girl in particular, I mean, she rebelled. I mean, she was at first year university.
Yeah.
She was just an absolute, just went wild. Absolutely wild, because she was just suddenly let off the reins and, you know, all the things that she'd, you know, and she was very naive as well. You know, that was the thing. She wasn't worldly. And I want my kids to be worldly. My son, I mean, he's more cynical than I am. And believe me, that takes a lot. Which is great. He's just got a trust nobody attitude, and everybody, you know, people are shit and all the rest of it. It's like, you'll do well, lad. You'll do well, you know. So anyway, what have you got to say?
You know, I was one of those kids that were sheltered when they were younger, and it's embarrassing. Parents, let your kids watch TV. Let your kids listen to music. You know, I remember the kids, and this was probably elementary school, and they were like, you know, all talking about what radio station they listened to and what pop, you know, star they liked and everything. And sheltered little, you know, Xena, it was Christian music. So I was like, you know, that was what radio station. Yeah. What radio station do you listen to? I was like, 88 AM, and they're all like laughing at me, and it was like really embarrassing. So,
I bet you were bullied. You are just the sort of kid I would have bullied at school, to be honest. Yes, I would have picked on you.
I still remember the kid's name. Yeah, he was so mean to me. So, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, they do. I mean, anybody who's slightly different like that, you know, and kids are horrible. I mean, kids are terrible.
Yeah.
Kids are horrible, nasty thing. They will pick, you know, it's the herd mentality. Yeah. Anything that's slightly different, anybody that stands out a little bit, and you're just picked on. You know, we picked on a kid mercilessly because he had ginger hair, and that was the only. He was a nice lad, but he had ginger hair, so we picked on it. But kids are like that. It's just. Yeah, but we did it in fun. Yeah. Well, it was fun for us. Obviously, maybe it's not for him. But I'm all for, you know, expose that. You know, the world is a brutal, horrible, nasty, cutthroat place, and the better prepared they are for it, I think the better.
Yeah.
To be honest,
I totally do. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So anyhow, do we or do we not have a show? That we nearly didn't have a show, I have to say. I will tell you now, with the whatever I did to get things working, none of the clocks or anything, none of the timers are working, so I don't know how long we've got. I don't know how long each of the clips last or anything, so we're just winging it tonight. It's like the old days when they used to do, you know, do radio live, and you know they used to wear a tuxedo and whatnot, like the old BBC days. So,
hey,
and I'm
I
not wearing. I'm only just wearing clothes, to be honest. And I'm wearing what I've worn, rather frighteningly, I think, for the past 3 days, which are my Minions sort of comfy casual bed pants and a sort of a wife beater shirt with ominous stains down the front, which we're probably I need to put in the laundry at some point, to be honest. You know, it was funny actually, just the other day, I took the kids, I took the kids to the gun range to play with dad's new toy, and I put my hand, ran my hand through my head. I couldn't honestly remember the last time I had a shower. That shit.
Oh,
I'm going to go out. Because I haven't been out, been anywhere. So I actually thought I'd better have a shower. You know, it's like weird stuff.
Yeah.
But time is just, I don't know. I think this is why I like the show, because at least it's a staging post for us. We know it's show day, it's Thursday. We that much. We can hang on to. We can cling on to this, you know.
It's scary, you know. Like every week, we're like, I can't believe it's already Thursday again. But no, this time it's. We just did the show like yesterday. I swear, like I have no idea where this week went to. It was just on a blur. The whole thing was just a blur to me, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on there. Yeah, it's the end times, and I keep singing in my head, "It's the end of the world," as we know it, you know. And I'm not doing well.
thank you.
I know, but we have the show, and the show will go on. And I do think that we should really sit down and write the Bizarro of the two late night podcasters that just
There was, you know, it's funny, there's a really good indie movie, and I cannot, it's got a sort of a weird name, that was set in a radio station, and it was pretty much all, most of it set, like, in the, whatever, the recording booth, whatever they call it, the sound studio, and there's that bit with the zombie apocalypse going on outside. Which reminds, I'll look it up actually during the interval. Unfortunately, I don't find it. Great indie movie, you know, and it's a zombie movie with a bit of a difference. The acting, the writing is terrific in it, you know. So I will look it up and see if I can find it. But cracking little film. Anywho. So do pray tell, what have we got on the show this evening?
We do have stuff. We have returning guest, Chris Miller. He's been on a couple of times before, and he's always a pal. I'm excited. And
me too. I'm excited too. I'm frisky over here.
And then we have on our second segment, horror fantasy writer Richard Risen. I'm hoping I pronounced his last name right.
He will put you right. Let's climb. I'm sure Chris is obviously, I don't know how long he's been at home because the clocks aren't working on this thing here. So there you go. So I think without further ado, I think we should bring him on. Over to you, Christina.
Right.
Cue him
we
in.
We have returning guest horror author Chris Miller. Woo!
Hello, Chris. How you doing?
Hello. Welcome to the end of the world, guys.
Yes, indeed. This could be, as I say, Xena, we're going to have to write it. We had this idea of a story in which two podcasters, you know, and we it's the end of the world, but they have to keep broadcasting because the minute they don't, they die. So it's there.
Right.
It's a story for our times. But so I hope you're keeping fit and well, Chris. Indeed,
well,
it has. Well, good. So having said that, he nearly didn't go on tonight because of technical difficulties. So
right.
Maybe that's what's happening. Everybody is doing podcasts because they're bored and it's something to do, you know?
Yeah, they're breaking the internet.
Mm. So, Chris is here to talk to us about his book, The Damned Ones. I love the tagline, "When religious mania and cosmic horror collide, everyone is damned." Loving it. Loving it. So, tell us a bit more about it, Chris.
So, I think last time I was on, I talked about The Damned Place, which was the first book in this series. That one was set in 1990, following a few kids getting harassed, and they encounter this cosmic beast. So now in The Damned Ones, we're 26 years later, so it's 2016. And The characters and survivors from the original book are all grown up now. The main guy, Jim, he was Jimmy in the first one. He's going by Jim in this one. He's now become the chief of police, but he's also an alcoholic, and he's haunted by the memories of what happened all those years ago. And all of a sudden, people start going missing in town. And in one of the houses where the family goes missing, there's blood everywhere, but there's no bodies. And so it's thrust upon Jim in this tiny little 3,500 population town to investigate these, what appears to be brutal murders, even without any bodies. And in the process of that, he starts to piece together that all the people that are missing are connected to this church, this fundamentalist non-denominational church, which happens to be run by the parents of the human villain in the first book. And his little brother, Norman, who's grown up now, he is on he has delusions of grandeur that his mother has poured into him throughout his years, that God is going to use him to transform the world, and he's going to use his music that he does on the worship team, all this crap, and he believes it. And he's also got a tumor on his brain that's not helping with his thought processes. And he happens to encounter this beast from the first book and pledges to bring him meat. And then it takes off from there.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
I know. And then it takes off from there. I'm like, wow, that was pretty much a whole book right there.
Wow. That's just the setup.
that's just the elevator pitch. That was brilliant. Loving it to bits.
Thank you.
Now, it's going to be a trilogy, is it, or just?
It will be eventually. You know, when I first started these, I actually wrote these two books as one really, really long book. And then when I got to like 235,000 words, I was like, this is just too much for one novel. And luckily I had pretty much told a complete story in the 1990 timeline and the 2016 timeline. And so I was able to separate them and make two novels. But yes, I do have a pretty fleshed out idea for the third one. It's just a matter of finishing about 5 or 6 projects first before I can sit down and start writing that one.
No problem. You rattle those off at the weekend. Not a problem.
Yeah. An afternoon's work. Nothing.
Yeah. Easy.
Well, Chris, I want to hear more. Do you have a rating for us?
I do. I will do my absolute best to fit this into 5 minutes. This is actually kind of from the middle of the story, so the disappearances and the, you know, supposed murders and stuff have been going on, and one of the characters, he's not the main character, but he is a main character, decides he's going to go check that old place in the woods that they have avoided for 26 years, and he has heard a voice out there. He saw light, he's heard a voice, and so this is the scene. Are you guys ready?
Yep, ready for you.
Excellent. Here we go. Oh, my God. Ryan was speaking, though full of fear, with a minute croak and a flat tone. He was so scared that his voice seemed to lose the capacity to communicate his fright. There was a dead man on the porch of the house. A random fire, which, as it turned out, had been what had caught his eye as he was inspecting the strangely abandoned car on the gravel road, was slapping at the dark with boneless flames. It was an eerie scenario as it was, and eerie graduated into full-on terrifying when you dropped a bloody corpse on the house in front of the fire, a house that was equally randomly placed in the middle of the woods, sprouting up from the ground as though it were part of the forest which surrounded it. Oh, my sweet Jesus. The tone in his voice was now reaching for, if not quite acquiring, the element of fear that the rest of his body was having no issues communicating. He lifted his shirt instinctively and snatched up the Glock. The textured polymer grip felt soothing in his hands, and he subconsciously savored the feeling. Anything that helped to abate the slithering snake of terror sliming laps up and down his spine was a welcome thing. His phone was still in his other hand. He'd never made the call to Jim that he'd planned to make, the one that would let his friend know that he'd done the stupid, foolish thing of coming out to this place alone and without someone to watch his back, the one that would get the gears of the small-town police force turning and flood the place with cops and more guns. No, he'd never made that call. Even now, as his eyes locked with that of the butchered corpse on the porch of the house, his mind wasn't sending him signals to call, to use the fucking thing. It was right there in his hand, and all he could do was stand there trembling and pointing his gun, also shaking, at nothing at all. And why? Because it made him feel better? Because it made him feel as though that bucking, whinnying cult of horror that was pounding in his chest, pleading to be let out, begging to break free and run the fuck away from this awful damned place and this idiotic situation he'd gotten himself into and send him into a panic flight of cowardice? Yes, goddammit, that's precisely why. He managed to take a small step forward toward the fire, looking over the lapping flames at the eerily shadowed house with the bloody ball of flesh lying there, staring stupidly at him. He made another step now. His brain wasn't consciously operating his feet. they were on some form of autopilot, like the way your brain reminds your lungs to take a breath every couple of seconds without thinking deliberately about it, the way your eyelids blink every so often to keep your eyes from drying out, which they were doing so now with vigor, standing so close to the flames. He felt as though he were floating toward the terrible sight before him that hovered over the flames, which licked the dark with their terrible tongues, their flapping tentacles that flailed aimlessly and ceaselessly into the dark night, cutting the blackness surrounding the place and casting moving shadows and waves of heat into the air that sickened his stomach to watch, though rendering him powerless to look away. Away from the poor man lying there, there on that terrible porch of that terrible house where so many terrible things had happened, the place he and his friends had vowed to stay away from forever all those years ago, the place Jake had taken Honey and where he and Jimmy and Freddie had come to rescue her from the monstrous bullies, the place where they had discovered another world filled with real monsters, and the place where the worst monster of all had come through. "Why are you here?" he screamed to himself as another shudder overtook him. "How stupid can you be? Get out of here. If there's a body lying there like that, do you think the killer is far? What if he's watching you right now, waiting for you to take just one more step?" And as if in an answer to his internal scolding, a shape moved with blinding speed in the outer rims of his periphery. It was dark and he didn't have time to get a good look, but whatever it was didn't seem to be human. The shape of the head was all wrong. If Ryan had had more time to react, to behold the thing coming at him in the dark, perhaps he'd been able to ascertain what it was. As it was, though, he hadn't. All Ryan had time to do was take a half step back. That was all. A mere foot and a half step in the opposite direction from which he'd been heading. His head shifted in the direction of the shape charging down upon him, but only a fraction. And it was this minute movement which saved his life. He could hear an awful breathing sound coming from the thing. In the split second his mind had to process what was happening, the sound suddenly reminded him of a whoopee cushion when the air was farting out of the rubber mouth, and for an insane wonder, he actually blurted out a single gasping laugh. That was all he had time to do. A whooshing sound whistled past his face, and there was a blur in his vision. Then the thing was running into him and he was falling over. His cell phone flew from his hand and spun like a helicopter rotor through the air. His gun went in the other direction, thudded to the dirt, pushing leaves as it skidded to a stop. Now he was falling, and whatever the thing was that had hit him, it was falling with him. The momentum and the near miss with the blurred thing that whistled past his face had thrown it off balance, and it was going down too. Air rushed out of Ryan as he collided with the earth. He made a loud oof as he hit and happened to see his phone cascading into the fire. It hit one of the burning logs with enough force to shift its position slightly, and sparks bloomed into the air. Then the thing that had hit him tumbled into his view in front of the fire and was silhouetted in a comically flamboyant crash, arms and legs flailing around like a discarded rag doll. Ryan began to heave, desperately trying to pull air back into his lungs for just a nanosecond, unaware of anything else but the need to get oxygen back into his system. "Oomph!" the thing cried as it hit the ground before him and slid over the leaves and loose dirt. Minute slivers of the air were cutting their way back into Ryan's depleted lungs now, and the situation came crashing down on him like a load of bricks. The fear leaped back up from the depths, that bucking bastard of a horse now in full revolt once again. He rolled over, sucking in precious gobs of air every half second, and began to scoot backwards on his butt and his back. He could see now that whatever the thing was, it actually did look human, at least mostly. It was pushing itself up from the ground now, and in the shadowy image of its silhouette formed in front of the fire, he could see the outlines of a very human legs and arms. The torso seemed right, too. The only the head was wrong. He heard that terrible breathing sound again and was again reminded of the whoopee cushion. Another laugh escaped him involuntarily as he squelched it immediately. The thing was rising to its full height now, and he could see the blurred thing which had rushed past his face just a moment ago. It was gripped in the thing's hand, and the distinctive shape rang home immediately in his mind. A small axe. Only that's not what you called it. In his now frantic scoots away from the monster, his mind couldn't land on the right word, couldn't pull it from the files in his mind where it surely resided. All he could manage were the basics of survival to get away from this thing before him, before it could use that whatever you called a small axe. Oh God, why couldn't he think of it? You're interfering with the work of the Lord, the thing hissed at him from its entirely wrong head, the words punctuated by that terrible flapping breathing. Ryan couldn't manage any words in response. The only thing he could do was to keep crawling away and fail at new attempts to keep from laughing at the farting whoopee cushion sound the thing kept making. The cackles rose from his chest and leaped out, Ryan no longer capable of holding them in. They were mad sounds, the raving howls of a lunatic, but he couldn't control them. He began to roar with laughter, terrible, horrified laughter. This seemed to piss the thing off.
I hate that. I didn't think I would get all of that in. How dare you stop it? I was living that. That was brilliant. I love that. It was awesome. Oh, you read it beautifully as well, Chris. You should do your own audio books at all? Because if not, you should.
I don't, because I don't have the time and equipment, but I would love to be able to. But I also know myself, and I'd probably never get it done. So it's better.
Fair enough. Leave it to the professionals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you read that very, very. I was living that. That was brilliant. That was brilliant. It was all going,
Thank you. So, where's
the inspiration from for this series?
Okay, so when I started it, and I've always been open about this, I had just finished reading rereading It by Stephen King, and the first season of Stranger Things had just come out, and I had just binge watched it. Okay, so both of them have the coming of age thing going on, and in one of them the kid has some powers and stuff, and I was like, I want to do a coming of age story, and maybe I could also tell it from their perspective as adults too, many years later, which, It kind of handled, but otherwise it was going to be its own thing. And so I got started on it, and like I said earlier, it just grew into this monstrous beast. And the first book was almost 600 pages. The second book is over 400 pages. So for one book, that would have been a freaking doorstop,
Yeah.
I was glad that I pretty much told a complete story arc in both timelines. And then I was able to go back through and separate them and edit them and make them each independent novels.
Well done. Thank you. 600, that is nightmarish proportion. I'm impressed. No, I'm really impressed. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
No, when I was heading to the bookstore to pick out a book when I was younger, I always, if it was down between, 200 pages or the 500 pages, I would go to where the 500 pages every time.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm with you. That's how I discovered Stephen King, actually, because I got what was his first short story collection called? I got that.
Was it Night Shift?
Next to it was The Stand, which was 16-foot thick. So I thought, fine, that'll do.
Yeah.
And I remember I got Night Shift, The Stand, and Salem's Lot all together. Absolutely. And to be fair, Salem's Lot is one of Salem's Lot and It, my two favorite King novels.
But I read so quickly.
If I got a 200 page book, I'd have read it by the time on the bus on the way home. So it was just it was ridiculous. So are you a big Stephen King fan? Is that where a lot of your inspiration comes from, or do you read around a lot?
I read very, very diversely, but like Extina was talking about earlier, she was one of those sheltered children. So was I. I had to listen to nothing but Christian music and then Christian rock and roll, which
Give it up for Petra.
You know,
who doesn't love Petra?
You know what? Petra had some cool songs, and then Stryper, too, if you're into glam rock with guys wearing spandex and socks in their crotch. But but you know what? You know, they could jam. You know, listen to the guitars,
yeah,
they could jam, you know. Oh my God! They were.
We need to get some Christian rock on the show. I think.
Stryper's kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
I will. You guys can recommend some stuff, and I will look it up. I remember a couple of years ago, I took the kids to Splash Town, which is not far, about 20 minutes from here, and we just happened to go, and it was that Christian day or something. And they had actually had a live with the wave pool. They had a live band, the Christian rock band, playing, and they were banging. About the lyrics were a bit iffy. There's not much that rhymes with Jesus, to be honest. but it was I mean, the music was
Jesus.
Great. And I have to say, you know, I mean, it was busy. It was a lot. Obviously, all the Christian people in and everything. And they were the rudest bunch of people. I mean, I'm there with my who was like 8 at the time, and they, you know, I'm on the lazy river, and they're barging between us, and that's you don't come between us and his 8-year-old daughter and get away with it, bucker. I must have put more elbows in faces, you know.
Under. Yeah, you always swim under.
They would literally, because I'm holding on to her, and they're trying to, I'm holding on to her because she was still, you know, still learning. She's not a strong swimmer at that point. And they're behind us, and it's just don't, seriously. You will learn the hard way. You piss daddy bear off. And, but no, honestly,
right.
they were the rudest bunch of people I've ever met. And they're all in one place, just like, oh. Now I know to look. I look at the calendar before we go. Make sure it's not, you know, Christian Rock Day or something.
That is so sad. But it's true. You know,
I have to say,
I mean, I was brought up in church, and I was, you know, it was a big part of my childhood, my growing up, and I hate that is the truth, but it really is. I mean, there are so many so-called Christians that are just not good people, and they almost wear that as a badge. Well, you know, because I am a Christian, I guess I'm allowed to be whatever I want to be, because I don't know. It's just, it's sad.
It's where the phrase holier than thou comes from.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They do.
And
they,
you know,
look down the nose at people. And
absolutely.
I do not like that. If you want to rub me up the wrong way, look down on me.
Sure. You know, and to be fair, there's a lot of people out there that aren't like that who are Christians.
That's true.
But
true.
No, I know a lot of really good people. I live in East Texas, tiny little town. So literally everybody around here is some form of Christian, you know, and there's a lot of good people, you know, they're not mean, they're not bashing anybody, you know, nothing like that. But the ones that get a, you know, get themselves a pulpit, get a bullhorn and everything, those people are awful.
Yeah,
God,
all of those people were at Splashdown on that day. I'll guarantee you, every one of them. Obviously, I mean, despite the accent, I'm a fellow Texan. I'm in Houston, and when we moved here, it was like, you know, people ask. I mean, I was from England. I'm not used to people that come out right. You know, what church do you go to? Which was always a sticky subject for me, because do I lie? Do I make something up? Or because, you know, you say, well, you know, I don't go to church, and that is worse than being an Islamic fundamentalist in Houston. You'd be better off saying, I'm sorry. I'm a pedophile, you know, rather than say I'm an atheist. As long as you believe in Jesus, you're all right, you know. It's like people would come up to
East Texas and see how bad it gets.
Oh really?
Oh my God!
It's even worse.
I was raised in, you know, kind of a fundamentalist, evangelical kind of.
Just like on the TV.
And,
brilliant.
But yeah. And so people are running around with banners and tambourines, and people are raising their hands.
Wow.
They're falling out on the ground. all that kind of stuff, you know. And I actually include a church service like that in this book, by the way.
Oh, fantastic!
It kind of covers all those bases, but you know, and I, you know, my parents were into it, and they're good people. They're not, you know, mm-hmm. they're not crazy judgmental types or anything like that. But they got into that, you know, kind of a rock concert Sunday morning thing, and mm-hmm. and then years later, I was playing guitar. I was up there playing, and I got burned so bad. I ended up, you know, actually, you know, converting to Catholicism. It was still Christianity, but it was a lot more sane, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. people weren't running around.
Oh, seriously? Wow. That's saying a hell of a lot.
And they're just really, you know, they were a lot easier going folks. So that's how that happened.
Yeah, Chris, wow. I was brought up fundamental Baptist, and you know, if somebody said
yep.
amen, we're going to turn around and look, you know, who said that?
You bet.
You know?
You bet. Yeah, and
no,
probably
really?
After, you're probably going to stand up and give a standing ovation.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh.
You said
we're
amen.
Just,
God bless it.
We're just going to look at you funny. Yeah.
So anyway, so hold on, we have a caller, so I'm gonna bring the call, see who this is. Hello, caller.
Okay. Hey, what's up? It's Jacob from Texas.
Hey,
Jacob, have you called in before?
No, I have not. This is the first time I've listened to your show, and it's a fantastic show so far. So I think I'll be listening from now on. So you're doing a
fantastic.
Good job.
We got a fan. Hey, welcome. Thank
yeah.
you so much.
Absolutely.
Is there something you'd like to ask Chris?
Yes, I was going to ask you, Chris, during this time of everybody quarantining themselves, they should be, but what horror books are you reading right now, or what books are you reading right now, if you have time to read?
Okay, so right now, 99-ish% of the reading I'm doing is audiobooks that I can read while I'm in my truck going to and from work and then to job sites, because my job is considered essential. I work on water wells, and both for just residences and also municipalities and community rural systems. So we have to keep people in water, so I have to keep working. And so I'm on the road quite a bit, and I'm right now, I just finished it wasn't a horror book, actually. It was a science fiction novel called Gateway by Frederick Pohl that was really, really interesting. And now I'm about halfway through Congo by Michael Crichton.
Love that book.
For some reason, I've never read that novel. I've read a lot of his other stuff. Andromeda Strain is one of my favorite suspense books
Brilliant.
Ever.
Brilliant, yes. Yeah.
And
he wrote the was it the Terminal Man? I think that was a Crichton, wasn't it? Do you remember that?
Yes, he did.
We're going back a lot of years now.
Oh, yeah.
I remember reading that.
Well,
it was actually the movie. I remember seeing the movie in like the early 70s. So that's going back a long, long ways as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, Andromeda Strain came out somewhere in the early 70s, too, so
mm-hmm.
it's an older one.
Very prophetic
but,
as well for our time, yeah.
Yeah, but I am on my Kindle also. When I get a chance to sit down and read, right now I'm reading Dead Aware, A Zombie Journey by Eleanor Mary. I am not a big zombie book fan because
mm-hmm.
there's just so damned much of it out there. However, she really took a unique angle on this with this virus she created and how they're reanimated, because it's not total, you know, death to coming back. And then they have these memories, and they actually have a personality that's starting to come back inside of them. But meanwhile, the human race around it is still reacting just the same way they might in, like, Dawn of the Dead, you know, with the army and everything else trying to to suppress it. So she took a really interesting take, and it's also sort of a love story between these two zombies who were married before and were separated just days before this outbreak happened, and they both got it, and now they're trying to make their way back to each other across Canada. Really interesting story.
I love that you said there was a love story, you know, in the what we're going through now. Me and the boyfriend like to say, you know, there's no one I'd rather be quarantined with than you.
Oh, please.
I know.
So, Jacob, what are you reading at the moment?
Right now I'm reading When the Crow Fries by, I think it's by, I can't remember the author, but I think I just told Chris what it was. I can't remember the two authors, but it's called When the Crow Fries. It's like a horror mystery book. I believe it's on Kindle Unlimited too, but it's a really good book. I'll have to send Chris the link, and then you guys can put it under your blog thing. It's really
yeah,
great.
It's as the crow flies is what you sent me, and it does, the cover looks great.
Awesome. Yeah. I got to look it up.
Fantastic. I'll look that one up.
I hate to do this, Chris, but it is just time for our first segment to end. I think we went over a couple minutes. But,
well, let's say goodbye to Jacob. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Call
Jacob.
In again
for calling,
next week. Okay.
Yes,
speak to you soon.
Have a great day.
Okay. Keep listening. Have a great evening. Bye.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry time has eaten us, which is, you know, boo. These shows are never long enough, so...
It's an unstoppable winch. It just keeps marching on.
I know. And you keep writing.
It seems like that, yes.
Yeah, Chris, keep writing. So next time I have you on, we'll do a whole show because we have, you know, we're going to end. We'll get out some Christian rock bands and we'll just jam out. It'll be
fun.
Yeah.
We are going
to
jam to some Striper.
Yes.
I don't know what that is, but that sounds great.
Yes, I've got a Western coming out in May that actually ties into these Damned books. It's a standalone, but if you've read the Damned books, you'll get a little bit extra out of it because you'll see, cool. You know,
excellent.
So that's coming out in a couple of months. I'd love to come back on and rock out to some Striper while we talk about it.
Definitely. I will make it happen.
Xtina will make it happen. I'm going to be in your hands to let me know what these Christian rock. I've never heard, listened to Christian rock, oddly, and believe it or not. But
now,
I'm
now,
sure
I'm
if we can find someone
out
else.
Of glam. This is straight out of glam rock 80s, okay? So it's not like anything.
Brilliant. I love it. I love that.
Makeup on men, all that. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Love it. Right. It's a date. It's a date.
Yes.
In the meantime, we're going to have to hit the break. So thanks a lot, Chris. Have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having
me
on, man. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you for coming on. Okay. Bye-bye. And okay, so we're going to have a break because I need to fill up my iced tea. I need to get rid of the iced tea I've been drinking. So we'll be right back.
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
It's a Stranglers night tonight because I can. So there you go. I was 16 before I was saying before we came on the air. Many years ago, back in England actually, went to see Blondie, and Debbie Harry was probably one of my first crushes as a teenage kid. And supporting her was Hugh Cornwell from the Stranglers, and that was like the best night of my life ever, even better than my kids being born. You know, they just pale into insignificance next to Blondie. And the fun thing was, I mean, I didn't even know he was until he came on, literally until he came on. And, you know, I was like, oh my God. I was just like freaked because obviously I was there for Debbie. I mean, even then she was like late 60s, 70 or whatever. And by Christ, you know, for an old bird, she still got it. I'd have still done her, to be honest. I would. There was twitching.
Yeah, we saw Kiss last year, and, you know, they're old, and they were just rocking. They were amazing.
Yeah.
They really were. She had more energy than I did. You know, I mean, they were just rocking it.
I saw the Who about 5 years ago now, and they did like a 2.5 hour solid set, and they were like they say they're in the 70s, and by Christ, they put on a hell of a show. They were phenomenal. Stones, I mean, Rolling Stones have been old forever, and I saw those back in England, and they get the old even then, and they're still, and yet you get the bands today, and you know, like One Direction or whatever the fucking called, and oh, they're a bit done two shows, and oh, he's a bit tired, and oh, fuck off, you know. If you haven't got it, you know, Keith Richards, he'd do like a 6-hour show, and then cocaine and hookers, and throw TVs out of the hotel room, then back up the next day doing it again. You know, that was rock and roll. Today they're all rock and roll. They're just pussies, to be honest. They're rubbish.
They are. No,
one contemporary band, musician, or whatever, who is badass, who is not, you know, playing at
That's
it or just all soppy and nicey-nice, and I hate that.
Yeah, you know, we were thinking about concerts just not too long ago, and I was trying to figure out, you know, who I would want to see anymore. And any of the answers I have are like, you know, back in like the 80s and, you know, 80s, you know, probably 80s. I can't even think of anybody from the 90s that I really, you know, really like. But I'd love to see Ozzy. And I know he's got, you know, his new medical.
Oh, yeah,
up.
I know. I don't know. Has he stopped touring now? Because Ozzy would be great to see.
Yeah. And, you know, and Alice Cooper. Couple months, and you know
the old guys,
the high grails, and you know
they know how to rock. I mean, they make good music. They know how to put, and they put on a performance. And I'm trying to think who I would like to see who I've not already seen. I would see the Who again, definitely. I'd see the Stones again. Elton John was brilliant. I'm trying to think who I would. I can't think of anybody that obviously is not dead. I mean, obviously, okay. I'd love to see Elvis. I'd love to have seen Elvis. I'm just trying to think. I remember the saddest I saw was at Whitney Houston. And that would be back in 1999, and she was very much on the wane then, and she was just lost it. She just didn't have that. You know, which it was sad. It was sad,
you know,
to be honest with you, but
I'm going to tell you a one that I should be maybe embarrassed about, but I would totally go see oh my god, I said that and now I can't think of what her name is. Gosh, what is that girl? She does that song 22 and what else does she do? She does a bunch of good stuff that I like. She's you know what? It's totally. I can see her, but I cannot picture. She started out.
I would like to see contemporary artist. I would like to see would be Lady Gaga, because I'm a big fan. Through my daughter, funnily enough, I'm a big Gaga fan. I would go and see Lady Gaga. She's fantastic.
There we go. Taylor Swift. I just remembered.
Taylor Swift.
Thank you, babe.
Yeah.
Thank you, sweetheart. Yeah.
Do you know Taylor? She puts
Taylor
out some
Swift,
some decent tunes.
I like her. She's cute. So. But Lady Gaga, definitely, I would go see her too. She's got a voice on her. You know, when she first came out, kind of like doing the boppy thing, I was like, whatever. But she got some pipes there. I would go see her.
Oh God, yeah. Like you say, it was actually my daughter who. I mean, she was been a Gaga fan for a lot of years now, actually. And we used to play in the car. It's funny, ironically, taking her to nursery school, and we'd be singing along to Government Hooker and Teeth. It was funny because I remember we'd crank the bass up, roll the windows down, and when we played Teeth, it's got a very, very driving, throbbing bass line, and it would set the alarm off on my car. Be driving along as soon as the alarm would go off in the car. It was funny. Again, I can imagine she puts on, you know, whenever you see her performing on TV, whatever, she puts on a hell of a show.
She did that Paparazzi.
Probably.
Paparazzi,
brilliant song, She's got just some great sort of great stuff, you know. Probably, I would go see her if she came to town. Not contemporary, that I would really like to. I know, finally, Carlos Colon, who is a regular listener to the show, and obviously one of our authors, big fan of Jeff Lynne of ELO fame. He saw him, he came over, I think, a couple of years ago when he came over to the States, and he's launched a European tour. He comes to America. I mean, he's bound to come to here. Wherever he comes in America, I've got to go see him. Because I've been an ELO fan since the 70s, and I just got to see him. I've really got to see him live. So I said, there's still a few. I would go see Carlos in concert. He's awesome. We've got his album. You got it free. I had to pay. You made me pay for it.
I did. Find everything. Yeah. No, I love their sound. I do. They're great. And I would definitely go see them. They put on a show. So, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he sang in our show before. How cool is that?
Yeah. So, anywho. Sorry, say again.
I said he played us a ditty and everything. He sang for us. That was awesome.
Yeah, we need to get him on the show. We've been saying it for how many years now? 4 years. We need to have a musical show. We need to have a karaoke show. I mean, James Corden does carpool karaoke. We can do podcast karaoke.
We can.
And we get Carlos would serenade. He could do the whole show. He could carry the whole show. But yeah, we should have a musical show. Just play music and have some karaoke going on and get car. Because we had another guest who was in a rock band as well, didn't we? I can't remember which one that was now, but I know we had another one.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, Chris Miller, so he plays guitar. We could do kind of a musical show, and you know, it's the end of the world, so we might as well go out on a high, you know.
We should.
We might as well. Go out on a car, on a high.
Yeah.
So, what have we got coming on next? Do tell. No, you can't, not yet, because I have to play this.
And so I wake up this morning and I step outside and I take a distance and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? And I
So, hey, Xena, what is going on?
We have some things, some really amazing things.
Big things, some big things, many things, and very good at things. I do the best things. We actually have tomorrow, in spite of the coronavirus, because this is Hellbound Books, and it takes more than a microscopic packet of protein and RNA. To close us down, we've got two brand spanking new titles out tomorrow. We have The Pilgrim and the Prophet by Victor Morrow, a debut novel, and what a debut novel, I have to say. And we have Pandemonium by Luke Walker, who is a fellow Brit, and I think it's his fourth book with Hellbound Books. So we've got all that going on. I have noticed there's been an upsurge in activity in the audiobook department, so
that's
keep an eye on that. Everybody's sat at home thinking, what am I going to do? Oh, I know what I'll do, I'll narrate a book, you know, which is, you know, brilliant. If we can help, obviously it means that, you know, that they will earn some money and they've got stuff to do and it's fantastic. So, you know, like I say, you know, it'll be us and the cockroaches, you know, Armageddon will come and go, and me and Xena, the cockroaches, maybe the ants as well, still doing this nonsense and still putting out books. So that is what is going on, and it's exciting stuff. So yeah, well, all the PR will be going out tomorrow, newsletters going out, and Xena's going to be doing a thing on social media.
Yeah.
So buy the book, people. Buy the book, support indie authors. Buy the book. So, anyhow, that's a publicity bit. It's a PR bit, though. Who've we got coming on next, Dina?
For our second guest, we have horror fantasy writer Richard Ryden.
Hi, Richard. How
Hello.
Are you? Hello.
I'm good. Yourself?
Good. I'm good. Sorry about that. Yeah, I, you know, We almost brought you on. I forgot to do the plug for the new book. So sorry about that. We are good. How are you?
Yeah,
are you
no
keeping
problem.
You're keeping safe and well, I hope.
Staying safe, yep, absolutely. Everybody
good,
should, right?
Well, the responsible ones amongst us should. It's the idiots who are not that are going to just keep this thing going on,
absolutely.
Which is...
I was surprised they even had St. Patrick's Day. I thought that was kind of weird, but, you know, because on St. Patrick's Day, everybody's in the tavern and they're like sardines, you know?
Oh,
yeah,
gosh,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, in England, they, they were, we recommend this, we recommend that. Then, they had St. Patrick's Day. Everybody just ignored everything. So Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, literally just shut the country down. So, right, that's it. Literally, I mean, you've seen the memes, right? You're all grounded. And it literally closed the country down overnight. None of this, well, we'll close this and we'll do this and they did it like they're doing over here. It was just boom. Even the McDonald's have closed over there. I actually took a picture of my bought my son a McDonald's yesterday, took a picture and posted it for my English friends. So,
I saw that.
Just to rub their faces in it. But yeah, literally, you know, things are bad when McDonald's was closed. I mean, it's like, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a flicking
not
switch,
even,
right?
Not even doing drive-through, yeah. Not even doing drive-through, just closed.
Yep.
But, anywho, Richard, it's not about his book. The Angel of the Grave, and the tagline is Become the Fire, which is, that's an intriguing tagline. You're gonna have to fill us in, Richard. Tell us what it's all about.
Thank you. Well, what the book is about, it's basically in a series called the Celestial Ways Saga. And it's the first book in a series in that it's a book zero, and it's setting a kind of a magical foundation for the rest of the series. The other books are going to be more martial, more military, but The Angel of the Grave is actually about a group of witches. Well, actually several groups.
I like witches.
And there's a bunch of subplots, too. One of them is about a woman who meets a baron by mail and winds up going to his country and becoming a baroness. Her name's Lady Wallens. And then, there's just a bunch of little subplots, sub-characters. It's kind of like a gothic version of Grimdark. That's what I like to call it.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah,
you've got me intrigued now.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, it's my fourth book, and I'm about to start the fifth one soon.
Wow.
Hopefully as soon as, the library opens up again, because everything's closed. So,
yes, it is. Yes, it is. I always ask, obviously, we have authors on who write a series. I mean, something I think if I sat down and thought, I'm going to write a series, my brain would just go, no, I would just switch. I mean, did you set out to plan it? Did you plan it? I'm going to write a did it just evolve that way?
It really did, because what happens was I was going to write one series, and then at the end of the first book of that series, seeped back in time. I had like a flashback at the end. And so then I said, well, this has to be its own book. And then I realized, well, this has to be its own series. So that way I wound up with three different series, and now I'm stuck writing these three independent series, before I can do much of it. So it's actually, it's actually kind of a double-edged sword, You have some really interesting continuity, because all three of them, when they're written, the three series will all, they'll interlock. But, it confuses the public, because why would he write, the first book of one series, then another one, and it's like, it's only with this last book that I'm actually getting to, start putting the pieces together. I've actually kind of decided on having three separate series, but they're going to be four books each, and they're going to run zero through three. In other words, each one would have a book zero, which takes place in the past, and then it would the progression would be through book three. So you'd have what sets everything up, the book that sets everything up, and then you'd have three books of more of more rising action, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
It does.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in awe of you know, I mean, any author who can write so much more than one book. I mean, you have to plan to do that number of books. I don't know. I get to an end of a book and that I just need to do something completely different. You know, it's funny. I always, you know, anything I write, you know, I suppose anything anybody writes is always open to a sequel and that. But I just want something new. I think I just get fed up with the characters. You know what I mean? maybe it's that I haven't met my characters that I just want to keep going on with. You know, and I just I've got a novel out of them. I'm fed up with them. Their company now. I want somebody new. But yeah.
I hear you.
I was going to say, James, you don't have a lot of time of your own to sit down and write, but I can't think of the title, the Memory Care Posse, you know, that book, what is going on with them? Are you ever going to finish that for me?
The Silverado Springs Memory Care Posse. Yeah, it is on my list of things to do. I need to. It's like its fourth draft. It needs finishing. It just needs editing and tweaking. And certainly before all this, the zombie apocalypse happened. You know, my objective is to get that done and get that out. I want that out this year, you know, but it is like you say, it's just finding to between, you know, other projects and I have going on and whatnot, you know. It's one of those things. If I put my mind to it, I would make the time. I think it's just being lazy. But you just keep pushing me. Keep pushing me.
Yeah.
I will see.
Time,
I will do it.
Time management. Yeah, sure.
It is. Time management. I have, through my professional career, I was in sales and marketing for many years. I went on a lot of time management courses. And it's not for me. It's not for me. You know, the guy be there. Well, you this is how you manage your time. And I say, oh no, that just seems like too much hard work. I'd rather wing it.
Well, it's more work, right?
You're exactly.
More work by managing your time.
Yeah.
So.
I could spend.
Kind of a catch-22, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the minute he said, well, you know, get up sort of an hour earlier each morning to go through your time planner thing. You could hear me hear my brain switch off. No.
Right.
I'm not getting up. No, I like sleep.
Well, then,
thank
then
you.
You're less rested.
Well, that's it. And you get tired sooner in the day, you know. So it didn't really work for me. So, but yeah, I'm relying on Xtina to bully me into it. Because it's there. It's written. It's not that I'm going to write from scratch. It's written. I just need to finish the damn thing.
I
will.
Love the character. Yes, definitely.
I will.
It definitely was a short story that I read thinking, wow, this could be so much more. So I can't wait to...
I wrote the short and I fell in love with the... Maybe these are my characters. I fell in love with the characters and thought, I've got to do more with these people. So you never know. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, this is not a big plug for my novel that I've not even finished yet. Richard, do you have an excerpt to read for us, sir?
Oh, I do.
Brilliant.
Would you like to hear it?
Well, I would love
to.
Yes. We would love to. If you need, do you need to introduce it?
Sure. Basically, like I said, this lady comes from one country to another to become. Baroness, Mary Baron. And basically she's going through town one day and her party having a slight altercation with a blood witch. Blood witches obviously being ones that would be able to manipulate flesh and blood, right? So basically the witch's name is Hildy. And it's about Lady Wallens, and that's, I guess, all the intro that I would need.
Okay, it's all yours.
Okay. It was late one afternoon in the upper city of Jifarate, which is a city. Lady Wallens, Dare Mardrin, and their four handmaidens were heading north on Weatherby Boulevard. They'd tired themselves out with a late lunch and much shopping at boutiques. All the while, Lady Wallens and Dare Mardrin had chatted away incessantly. They continued to do so as the handmaids conversed amongst themselves. Even Michaela Burrick chimed in from time to time, though she was not the most social young woman in the world. The street was open to foot traffic and was wide enough for a good 10 people to walk abreast. Yet even so, as Lady Wallens and the others strolled leisurely down it, someone managed to shoulder her. Tracy had been walking on her right, but had simply moved aside to let the lurching old woman pass, assuming that she was just drunk or something. However, a woman with the lofty social stature of a baroness would do no such thing, though Lady Wallens just continued forward, unseeing and with her head held high. And that was why the jar came as such a shock. She froze in place instantly, trying to recover. Her features quickly became cross, and she fixed the